You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
I always wanted to be a veterinarian, but I've heard that phrase so many times during my career as a veterinary medical doctor, and I'm always saddened by the reality that people have given up on their dreams, frequently without even exploring the possibilities. My following four guests never gave up on their aspirations. A kid who went to a one-room schoolhouse with a passion for fish and writing, a first-generation Filipino-American who started playing doctor at 5 years of age and attended Yale planning on becoming an MD, an emergency medicine veterinarian whose early experiences of being stalked by an alligator and being bitten by a moray eel left him delightfully twisted, and a little girl with an incurable horse craziness who grew up to be a recognized authority on equine orthopedics. This apparently motley crew has penned a scientific medical mystery that follows a fictitious class of disparate first-year students through the misadventures and challenges of what, at least for me, was the start of the four best years of my life, veterinary school. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Petco, where the pets go. Petco, where the pets go.
Pet Life Radio has tail wagging, fur flying, fabulous deals for our listeners from Petco. Get $6 off your order of $60 or more, and up to 40% off the entire Petco site.
That's right.
But that's not all.
Because you're a Pet Life Radio listener, you'll also get free shipping on your order of $49 or more. $6 off, up to 40% off,
and free shipping
from Pet Life Radio and Petco. To get these awesome deals, go to PetcoDeals.com. That's PetcoDeals.com.
Petco, where the pets go.
X-Power is a global brand that offers a complete line of stand dryers, cage dryers, and multiple blasters that cater to both home and professional groomers. Designed to be quiet, lightweight, and powerful, X-Power pet dryers will save you time, energy, and money. The X-Power B2 Pro at Home Dryer is the perfect gift for family and friends. Please check out our specials at ViperPet.com and Amazon.com. For more information, visit xpower.ws or call 855-855-8868.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Okay, crew, we have Dr. Howard Crum, Dr. Roy Yanong, Scott Moore, and Patricia Hogan with me. Thank you very much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, number one question. All of you don't have DVM after your name. You have VMD. Because you went to University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine. Okay, guys, why is it VMD?
It's in Latin.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think my understanding is exactly, it's just the Latin form of it, but we could be wrong. Howard?
I think it is. It's Veterinarius Medicus Doctorus.
But I tell my clients when they ask, is it just means we're very medical doctors.
Very much in debt, that's the other.
Yeah, that could be it as well.
And you're also very special, because the only ones in the entire United States who have VMD instead of DVM are you guys. So congratulations.
Yep, we're special.
Well, speaking of being special, okay, ladies first. Patricia, so you were this little kid who had the craziness for horses. Give us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, I actually grew up in, very suburban New Jersey. Did not have any horses, but was just one of those girls that just was afflicted with that horse crazy gene, I guess, from the moment of birth. So I just followed horses, whatever I did, whether it was reading about them, drawing them, trying to be around them, going on pony rides at all the fairs. That was me. And then just started finding a way to work with them. So I ended up working with some racehorses when I was 10 until I was about 15, and then just kept going. And, you know, I just really loved horses so much, but wanted to make a career out of it. And I realized that I really liked fixing things, too. So I just sort of put the two together, and here I am.
Good for you. So you're an orthopedic surgeon, correct?
Yes.
And your practice, I understand you have your own farm?
Yeah, I have my own practice on a farm in New Jersey, which is actually a great location. Most people don't realize how many racetracks are in the area, but within about 2 hours of our location, there's 17 racetracks. And so most of my patients are racehorses, both the trotters, the standardbreds, and thoroughbreds. And it's a wonderful career. Just love working on them. They're elite athletes, and most of what we do today is really to fix horses so that they can actually go back and be competitive.
I remember there was a very sad cartoon when I was in veterinary school, as I went into companion animal medicine, had to go through equine track, and, you know, what happens when a horse will go ahead and founder, shoot it, and what happens when a horse, you know, it was the answer to everything was shoot it, and that was definitely the old days. You guys are doing amazing things nowadays.
We are. We really are. I mean, we've learned so much more about how horses respond to, you know, something as simple as pain or anesthesia, the progress we've made in those fields, and then to fixing them. You know, the goal with horses, unlike humans, I can't tell my horse to lay in bed for 6 weeks while his leg heals. Actually, we have to be able to be smart enough to repair the leg, let the horse get up from anesthesia and walk, and, you know, sometimes use the leg in a manner that would not be very good for the repair. So it has to be doubly strong, you know, than what we do with people. So it's a real challenge, but it's made dramatic strides.
Speaking of challenges, emergency medicine. MDs and DVN or VMDs who are involved in emergency medicine, I have a feeling, are adrenaline junkies. You know, calm and then everything hits the fan at once. So Scott Moore, thank you for being with us today. You're one of the authors. Tell us a little bit about your background and what is this thing about being chased by an alligator?
Thanks for having us. I grew up all over, but spent a few years in Hilton Head, and Hilton Head was well stocked with alligators or lagoons. At least my memory is they were full of them. And there was a particular day I was out fishing, standing lagoon side with the fishing pole in my hand, glanced down, saw what I was sure was just a log in the water, glanced down a second time, realized the log had two eyes that were staring pretty menacingly at me, and my instinct was to take the fishing rod and not gently whack him on the head, which of course provoked him a bit. The chase was probably more in my mind. I ran. Whether he was following me or not, I didn't turn around to look. But despite that, you know, I think the connection, and those years in Hilton Head were formative because I spent a lot of time outside playing with animals. Some I should have been playing with, some I probably shouldn't have been. And then, long story short, didn't actually plan to be a veterinarian, unlike, as you said, many, many kids growing up do. I thought I was going to follow my interests maybe more through grad school. I spent some time in Africa and thought I'd study behavioral ecology, but fell in love with the idea of being maybe a pioneer in wildlife medicine, zoo medicine. Came back to Penn expecting to be a zoo vet. And if you ask these guys, that's pretty much who I was through those 4 years. I was Mr. Zoo Vet guy. And now, of course, ended up doing something almost completely unrelated. Though the comment about adrenaline, I think, speaks to the commonality between the zoo and ER medicine. There is that sense of you never know what's going to happen, that loss of control, which is exciting. You don't know what's going to walk through the door. You need to be prepared for anything. And that's definitely part of the attraction for sure.
And move fast.
Yes, move fast. That's right. Exactly. I don't have any alligators chasing me now, but there's definitely that need to multitask and to kind of come up against multiple challenges at a time. Hope you come out the other end with minimal bite wounds.
Sounds good. One of the other authors is someone people may have heard of actually listening to Pet Life Radio, and that's Roy Yanag. Roy, good to hear from you again. You've actually been on my show once before.
Exactly, and it's always a pleasure. I really enjoy speaking with you.
And tell us about your Pet Life Radio show so people can tune into that.
Sure. I am a fish veterinarian, so my Pet Life Radio show is fish-based, and it's Aquarium Mania. We talk about anything related to aquariums and aquarium fish and the hobby in general. So I think folks should enjoy it.
So it's much more than it's sick and just flush it down the toilet.
Exactly. We talk a little bit about different types of aquaria that you may want to keep, different types of animals, fish, plants, maybe go into some maybe things going on in the coral reefs, kind of a fairly broad range dealing with the aquarium hobby and some of the science surrounding it and the environments these animals come from.
So you were going to be an MD yourself. What happened? Where did you change your mind going, I think I like animals better?
Yeah, it was definitely in my family's best interest or their attempts to make me into an MD. I had a lot of MDs in my family on my dad's side and my mom as well. And I was pretty interested in animals from the start. Did a lot of the Wild Kingdom and Flipper and National Geographic all of the animal type shows. When I was growing up, watched a lot of those, went to Shedd Aquarium a lot. I grew up in Chicago, and probably the most instrumental and important thing for me was reading James Herriot's books, The All Creatures Great and Small, and the other that followed. Those really got me into the whole profession, you know, this old country doctor, and actually not so old at the time when he was writing about, but a country doctor talking about his life with animals, with the people, and that combined with all of the shows I'd watched and the zoos and aquaria that I'd visited really got me much more interested in the animal side. And then because of my background with my family on the medical side, those two kind of merged into veterinary medicine.
And last but not least, the lead author is Howard Crum. Howard, thank you very much also for being with us. And you have this interesting background of being in a rural area, one-room schoolhouse, so people are thinking, oh, yeah, I've grown up in an area that might not be as conducive to getting into veterinary medicine, for instance, like Roy being there in Chicago or Patricia. But you really followed your passion and also your passion for writing. Is this your first book?
Yeah, this is our first novel. And I have to say, it's our best-selling novel as well.
Very good. The best one you've had so far. What's your background? How did you come to this? Why did you want to become a veterinarian?
Yeah, much as you described in the opening, and very appropriately, you know, when we were kids growing up, if you loved animals, and I loved animals, everything, dogs, cats, horses, cows, everything, fish, too. If you loved animals, everybody said, well, you've got to be a veterinarian. And then pretty much right after that, they'd say, well, but it's impossible to become a veterinarian. So, you know, they'd kind of establish that dream and then dash it. But that always stayed with me. That was the thing to do. And I was also, along with Roy, very interested in aquatic animals, whales and dolphins and fish and things like that, of that type, and found out about the new field of aquatic animal medicine when I was in grad school. And it just happened. Penn was the place. They were pretty much in the lead at that point for aquatic animals. And I just got fortunate to be paired up with these wonderful folks in our class at that time. And we all just sort of, you know, hit the ground running there. And I, as you mentioned in your opening, the best 4 professional years of my life, I'd say, it was absolutely a wonderful experience.
I know I'm still very close to my classmates, and we just had one of our reunions, and seeing what everyone has done, where everyone has gone, has been fascinating. But what I find fascinating, how did the 4 of you come up with the title of the book, number 1, An Animal Life, The Beginning? What does it stand for?
Well, you know, I had a couple other different working titles that we were kicking around, but, you know, there was the sort of duality of an animal life, relating this animal life. And, of course, within that are the individual stories of animals that, as you know, can impact you greatly and have such tremendous effect both on the caregiver, the veterinarian, and the people that love them. So there was that sort of dual nature that we used. And the beginning is, it's the first book in the series because we're going to follow this class and these classmates through their 4 years of vet school and use that sort of novel platform, if you will, of veterinary school. That I think it's a world that, you know, we've been told is everybody knows about veterinarians. They know that they're such a profession, but they don't know how people become veterinarians. And so there's this whole world out in there of these veterinary schools across the country, and people are living this animal life. And it's quite extraordinary, a lot of fun. And as you know from your experience, the cross-section of your class is probably tremendous as far as diversity goes. The people from all walks of life come together, people with MBAs and backgrounds in law. Maybe they grew up in the country or they're city folks, and they could be from anywhere. And all of a sudden, they get thrown together in this class, and a very special bond forms, at least it did for our group especially.
Patricia, here's a question for you on some of these characters. And you talk about the death row group, and first I'm going, death row group? Oh, that sounds terrible. What's that? You know, are these the people that are failing and just not going to be staying in veterinary school much longer? It's like, oh no, it's the kids in the back of the room. Now, is that you and your three co-authors?
Oh my gosh, you're so right. Yeah, definitely was. Yes, and you know what? It was, like Howard said, it was the best 4 years. That group of people that... we didn't take it so seriously. We just really enjoyed the whole journey, not just, you know, we weren't just there to learn the books and get the grades. We really enjoyed the journey. We joined each other, and we just, you know, the back row is actually a wonderful place for observation, not only for learning everything, but what we observed about people and our classmates. And it was a great place to be. And we just really had wonderful times back there and still learned, but I think we learned a broader range of things rather than just what was, you know, up on the screen.
Roy and Patty's being kind. Howard and Patty were back row, which probably, it'd be interesting to know how this book might be different if Howard had been a frog, a so-called frog sitting
yeah.
in the front row. But Roy and I were a little more middle. We were probably not quite what would be the word, brash enough to sit back there with those troublemakers. So we got a perspective, a little bit of the front row, a touch of the front row geekiness, but with all the best qualities of the back row. Right, Roy?
Yeah, exactly, Scott. I think they liked observing me and Scott, and me especially, falling asleep. I think that probably kept them pretty amused.
You gave us a target to throw things at.
Exactly.
My job is to try to keep Roy awake, which is not as easy as it might sound.
No, it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Okay, Howard, since you're the lead author, give us a synopsis of the book. And I know veterinarians, veterinary students will love this, but it's not just for veterinarians. It's anyone who really is an animal lover and likes a good story. I mean, I'm sitting here at night going, I need to go to sleep. I have to turn one more page. So give us a synopsis of the book.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Yeah, it's, you know, it's a story about one story that unfolds in this verse. It's just this group of kids, if you will, or these young students that are facing the gauntlet of vet school. So that's just getting through the challenges and the rigors that are, that's one thing that's going on. There's another overarching story that is something that you deal with and we all deal with in this profession is medical mystery. You know, and there's a mystery where people are ill and animals are ill, and this is based on a real series of events that happened and also diagnosed by people we actually know. And so there's a medical mystery that unfolds over this book and will throughout the other books, each book as well. And then I think, you know, I don't want to say underneath it all, I'd say probably more likely overarching it all, is there's a love story that's building and growing. There's one that's growing that's going to have, you know, arc over the whole series. And there's a part of this book that's, I say, finding your place in the world. And it's finding your place in perhaps in veterinary medicine as it was sort of for us. And it's also finding your place with, you know, that right person, the person that you can truly love. And so, you know, so there's that component to it as well. And I don't want to give anything away, but there's some love stories that happen through that as well.
Well, I love a good story, but I also know that I'm going to have to love my sponsor by taking a short break right now. We'll be right back after this short message. We're talking right now with Drs. Howard Crum, Dr. Roy Yanong, Scott Moore, and Patricia Hogan about their new best-selling book, An Animal Life, The Beginning. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Every pet is unique. Maybe they're gray in the muzzle, yet young at heart. Maybe they're growing out of the puppy stage and into their paws and ears. Or maybe they're just trying to maintain a more girlish figure. At PetSmart, we have the right food for your pet at a great value for you. PetSmart. Be better together.
Go to PetSmartDeal.com and save up to 30% on pawsome gifts for the pets and pet people in your life. Toys, collars, leashes, PetSmart gift cards, treats, and more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com today. PetSmartDeal.com.
Love My Pets, the new single by Mark Winter, available in iTunes.
Aquariums and pond keeping are among the most popular of all hobbies in the United States and throughout the world. In fact, fish are probably the most numerous pet in people's homes and in their businesses. In Aquarium Mania, we'll learn more about the secret and not-so-secret life of fish and other inhabitants, the basics of good aquarium keeping, the complexities of the aquarium industry, and the science and art that surround this fascinating hobby. I'm your host, Roy Anong, and I'd like to thank you for joining us. Aquarium Mania.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
There are characters in this book that are definitely, I think, every veterinary school has this. And probably anyone who's been in a professional school or schools in general can go, oh yeah, I remember a crazy person like this. Roy, tell us a little bit about some of the characters that are there. You have Big Mo, Stan the Path Man, and the Drill Sergeant Dan. Were these really people that were in school with you, some of your professors?
I would say that the characters were definitely inspired by people that we knew or had known in class. I'm not going to say or give away whether or not characters were, you know, 100% or 50%, but, you know, as in any good fiction book, there's always a lot of truth in some of the characters, you know, regardless of the disclaimer. But there were definitely folks that inspired us with those specific characters. Now, Mo in particular was, I guess I could say this, Howard, right, was a real character and is inspired by a person that we did have as an instructor for anatomy. Great, great person, incredible teacher for all of us, really kind of knew how to make things understandable and just knew his material inside and out. He was spectacular. Stan the Pathman, definitely someone, you know, one or maybe a couple folks that inspired that character. There is, as you know, definitely a certain type of person that becomes a pathologist, and so much of the characterization of Stan is based on, you know, one or two people in particular, but in general, the pathologists are, you know, really one special breed of a veterinarian. And in terms of Drill Sergeant Dan, yes, there were a few, at least a few, maybe one a little more than others of our professors who had that kind of aura to them and that sort of stature as well for our class. You know, definitely incredible instructor and very, I don't want to say rigid, but very very straightforward in his approach to questions and answers and teaching. But, you know, we loved all of them.
Could herd cats, in other words.
Exactly, definitely.
And which one of these characters is you?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I think, you know, I would say the complex answer is that we are all kind of in all of them in some way. There is one particular character who does fall asleep a lot, and I would say for that specific instance and scenario, these guys would probably agree that's probably me.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But a little bit of a mix, I think, throughout the characters in the book.
Dr. Hogan, do you go by Patty or Patricia?
Patty.
So, Patty, you're the illustrator for this book also.
Yes, I guess just a closet illustrator, because it's just something I did my whole life but never did a lot with, and Howard knew about it, and I guess everyone did. I did sketch a lot during school, but it was just for fun, and I don't know, it just kind of came about.
Patty is an incredible illustrator, and we appreciated her drawings all the time, even if they did make fun of us occasionally.
Yes, there was a lot of Roy, actually.
As we see more of them, I think we're inspired to consider releasing like a coffee table book. the note service, you have to see some of these. Some of them are funnier in context, but honestly, they're great.
I love the cross-section of the brain, and, you know, there's the study, and there's sleep, and there's eat, and that one area that, yes, I think anyone who's ever been in school, no matter if it's veterinary school, college, because you shouldn't do it before that, is the happy hour spot. And that happy hour spot is so important, because one of the best bits of information, not information, but advice ever given to me before I went to veterinary school from a mentor, a veterinarian, was work hard, play hard. Scott, it sounds like you probably ascribe to that theory.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I certainly would say that balance is key. You know, you have to not take life too seriously, and our strategy, I think, as a whole, and one reason the four of us really connect, is that it was about the life experience. It was about making connections. It was about understanding your place in the world, and that the veterinary avenue was just one aspect of that. And such divergent paths lead to it that you have to continue to keep a really open mind about why you're doing what you're doing, and understand that there's so many ways to approach school and your interaction with your classmates and colleagues. And having fun is the point. I mean, that's really the point of life, not just school. So that was a great strategy for all of us to not only get through school, but then come out the other end with these connections and with a desire to kind of share the story. I think Howard would agree that a big impetus for telling the story is to celebrate what we all feel was just an amazing time, and to share it with others, and to encourage. You know, one of the things that we've heard when we've given talks about the book is how refreshing it was for current students, first years in particular, to hear how much fun the experience will be, and to see people who, I think, are perceived to have come out the other end really happy, and it can be inspiring. And I think it means more to us than anything else we've heard to know that we can kind of serve as an inspiration for that first year in particular, the first couple of years where, as I'm sure you remember, it can be really daunting, very difficult. So happy hour, yes, very important. I would say happy 24 hours.
It was an intimidating time, especially that first year, you know, that you're talking about the first time you meet all your classmates, you're in your lecture hall, everyone's coming in, and you are panicked. How did I get here? They must have been wrong to let me into veterinary school. I will never make it out. And then you at the end of the 4 years, like, hey, I fooled them all. I fooled myself. I really had a great time in the whole process. Howard, one of the things that I love about this book, sometimes I'm reading, you know, journals or other text, and I come across a word, and now unless I have my Kindle, it's like, what's that word? This book is fabulous because at the end, you have glossary of selected words and jargon. So it's not just all the scientific things. What made you put that in there?
Well, first of all, thank you. It was very kind of you. Well, as with most of the things that Roy, Scott, and Patty and I do, it was a lot about fun for us. And so the appendices in the book, it was a chance to actually layer in some more jokes, really. We wanted to give people, because there are going to be words in there that people are not familiar with or you know, they want to go back, and so they could check on it and get our take on those words and also maybe some context with the story. And we also, another thing that was going through our mind as we were writing the book, we're like, we were kicking out songs, you know, boy, this song, this makes me think of what was happening in anatomy when we were dissecting that horse leg. And then we realized the book, you know, needed a soundtrack. And so we also put that together. And it's just a suggested soundtrack for people if they want to have some fun to the kind of songs from that era and what we were listening to while we were doing. So.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because I tend to be a little bit backwards. When I look at a book, I go to the back of the book first and see what's back there, trying to not to look at the end of the story. But all of a sudden, suggested soundtrack, and I have never seen a book that had a suggested soundtrack. As I'm reading through this going, oh, Oh, I remember that song. Oh, what a neat idea. So you do need to come out, you know, compile it so you can have this audiobook that has the soundtrack behind it.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And those choices, all those choices were from our experts, Roy and Scott. They put that whole thing together.
So, Roy, when you weren't sleeping and you were listening to music, but at that time they didn't have iPods for you to listen to.
No, unfortunately not. We did have at least the CDs, so folks listening, you know, are probably at least familiar with CDs, even though everything's becoming more than strictly digital, but no iPods.
And Roy has a lovely singing voice, so, you know, at one point we're going to have to put together a soundtrack sung by Dr. Yanong.
Speaking of singing voices, Scott, I think that was your voice right now.
Yeah.
I understand that you do, sorry, this was in the bio, a stunningly accurate impression of a tree hyrax.
Awesome. Yes,
oh,
he does.
Now you're putting me on the spot. Yeah, I haven't done that in quite some time, and usually happy hour was involved. It got to the point where I would get requests to do it when I was rotating through clinics, but yeah, I spent about a year and a half in Kenya, and one of the first experiences I had there was the call, the nocturnal call of the tree hyrax, which, if you've ever heard it, sounds nothing like the animal that makes it. And the picture you develop in your mind is some kind of beast with fangs, and it turns out to be something that looks not unlike a guinea pig, but it's impressive. I don't know if I can do it for you now, but
I can. Please.
I could try. Okay, let me see. I haven't done this in about 10 years.
Okay.
There's two parts to it, so I'll start with the first part, which builds. It sounds a little bit like running your fingers over a comb. That's it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That was incredible, Scott. Awesome.
You are
Trust
so
me,
talented.
If you've ever heard a tree hyrax, the hairs in the back of your neck are standing up right now.
Mine are, for some reason.
The dog just sat up.
Oh, okay. So that is a great talent that you have.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
I hope it gets you somewhere.
The check's in the mail. Yeah, yeah. Well, it got me here, right?
Patricia, speaking of talent, some of your classmates, I know in my own class, there's researchers, there's equine practitioners, there's a person who's actually started stem cell therapy company for dogs and cats and horses. What are some of the things that your classmates have gotten into where you go, wow, I never had an idea they would do this?
I think we had such a unique class because it was so diversified. I mean, really, the three people that you're talking to here are very unique in what they're doing. But we have one classmate that's in the very high echelon of a pharmaceutical company that's global. She's a global director. And what else? We have many people have gone into certain sections of medicine that's specialized. I thought we had quite a few people that went on for specialized training. So there's several board-certified surgeons and medicine specialists.
One of our classmates is, I think she was the first one to do kidney transplants for cats, isn't that correct?
Yes,
yep.
Lillian Aronson, yeah.
Lillian Aronson, and then we also have Dr. John McCauley. He's a feline specialist outside of Philly. And
we've got a couple of folks that are very integral to laboratory animal medicine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. An oncologist, veterinary oncologist in the Philly area.
We've got one person that works over at Disney, actually one of the veterinarians over at Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, very diverse, I think.
And then, of course, you know, a lot of folks doing the small animal practice, mixed animal practice, you know, a lot of the general veterinary work as well.
The people that own practices, too, in our class.
The co-host for this particular show, The Pet Doctor, is Dr. Diane Levitan. She's also one of those VMDs, and I understand that she was your mentor, as you mentioned, mentors in your book also, Small World.
Yeah, Diane was actually my upperclassman mentor, and it's funny that storyline got, you know, woven into the book. She wasn't one of the characters in there, but definitely that relationship was inspired in the book. The upperclassman really sort of, you know, tried to help us get a little leg up and make sure we, you know, made it through that time and, you know, kept everything in perspective.
We had big brothers and sisters, and they were so integral to our success, and having their old test questions also helped a lot, too. Wasn't cheating. Everybody knew they were out there, but yes, that was very helpful. Howard, this is a different type of book, too, because, yes, it's a bestseller, the best-selling book that you guys have ever written. But the money's not really going into your pockets because you guys are all so extremely wealthy. What's the proceeds? Where are the proceeds going from the sale of this book?
Yeah, Bernadine, we wanted from the beginning, before we even, you know, wrote a word of this, that we wanted to have a give-back component. And so the net proceeds from the sale of paperbacks and e-books from our website go to animal charities. They go to support vet students, animal shelters, and we're also developing relationships with working dog programs. And we're just getting started, but people, when they check out, they can choose what charity they want the proceeds to go to. So it's important to us. We want to try to help out just like you do. And I think that's a pretty common thing for veterinarians, right? It's a part of our nature to try to give back a bit. So that's what we're trying to do.
Well, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but as veterinarians as a whole, yes, I think we are very giving, nice people. That's what we're always told. Now, one last thing. I would love to have one or more of you give a little reading if there's a part from the book that you go, ah, yeah, this kind of sums up how twisted and how fun it is. In the front of the cover of the book, it says, "The Tone and Irreverent Humor of MASH," and it is. Howard, are there any passages or a passage that you'd like to read?
Well, actually, I'll ask Roy, since you talked about Dan the Pathman before, there's a little, just a short excerpt describing him in that world.
Sure. Yes, Dan the Pathman, Dr. Stan Oblitsky, is a pathologist at the University of Philadelphia, and he is the setup for this short reading. Is he's with one of his colleagues who's got some students with her, and so here goes. Dr. Stan Oblitsky, Stan the Pathman, exclaimed, "Violet, what'd you bring today? Anything cool?" Without waiting for a response, he turned to the students and spluttered with an infectious passion only a pathologist could display. "Violet always has the coolest cases. Violet, remember the day you brought in the humpback head, 3 poison dart frogs, and a bison? Remember that, Vi? And remember vertebrate day?" He turned back to face JJ, his eyebrows raised so high they were almost mid-forehead. "A 20-foot python and an adult giraffe. It was so cool." "Yes, Stan, I do remember. That was last week." Violet Green laughed and shook her head. "If Stan Oblitsky were a puppy, he'd be wagging his entire hind end and fiddling with excitement." The necropsy room, in fact, the whole subspecialty of animal pathology, was a repository for veterinarians who were different, irregular, just this side of eccentric. Pathologists can't be shoehorned, even with copious amounts of KY, into the usual animal lover form of the regular vet. Of course, they care immensely about animal life and are arguably as smart or even smarter than their brethren in other demanding subspecialties like soft tissue surgery and internal medicine. But guys like ACVP board certified Dr. Stan Oblitsky are missing a gene or two, specifically the gene that codes for social enzymes, enzymes that catalyze the production of empathetic dialogue between animal doctors and pet owners. For instance, a sentence that should sound like, "Mrs. Smith, I am so sorry to tell you that Fifi has cancer," comes out of a pathologist as, "Oh my God, Fifi has the coolest, most invasive hemangiosarcoma I've ever seen in a long time. She's absolutely riddled with it. Do you want to see?" So it's a win-win situation that well-meaning, brilliant guys like Stan Oblitsky are cloistered in necropsy out of general veterinary circulation.
You know, in a very twisted way, that was just fabulous. And I think it's going to give the listeners a good idea of what they can look forward to when they read An Animal Life, The Beginning. And this was penned by my four guests, Dr. Howard Crum, Dr. Roy Yanong, Scott Moore, and Patricia Hogan. Thank you so much, you four, for being with us today. And when is the next book in this series coming out?
The next book is planned for this fall.
Oh, fabulous. And if people wanted to learn more about this book, where can they go to buy it? Where can they get the ebook?
The best place is online at ananimallife.com. And it's available in all the other outlets as well, through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBooks as well. But if they go to ananimallife.com, they can choose a charity for us to donate the funds to as well.
And like us on Facebook, too, if you can.
That'd be great.
Well, the four of you, thank you so much for being with us today. This, I'm looking forward to reading this book start to end and getting the soundtrack. It'll make it just even that much better. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please go out and get An Animal Life, The Beginning, a fabulous, fun book. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.